This program is brought to you by Resonance 104.4 FM. If you like what you hear and want to support our work, please make a donation at fundraiser.resonance.fm.
Sendung Wellenlänge. Vous écoutez la transmission longueur d'onde. Udite la trasmissione lunghezza d'onde. You are hearing the transmission called wavelength.
Hello?
Do you see what I mean?
Hello?
Yes, do you see what I mean?
I'm sorry, could you repeat that?
Ah, right, yes. If at any time during the conversation you say something to me which requires a reply or a reaction of some kind from me, and you don't get a reply or any reaction, the chances are therefore that I haven't heard it due to the fact that I've had the send-receive switch in the wrong position. In that case, it behoves you to repeat whatever it was that you said.
Yes. For the purposes of this sort of interview, can you just describe why that is? What is
yes.
this telephone?
Are we recording now?
We are, yes.
Yes, fine. Yes. Well, many, many years ago, I designed a special form of telephone, quite unlike the ordinary telephone, which suits my special needs particularly well. It has, for me, great advantages, but it also has, like anything in this world, it has disadvantages as well. And some people would consider that the disadvantages outweigh the advantages. I take the reverse view. I think it's well worth having, notwithstanding the disadvantages. Now,
presumably
should I at this stage first enumerate the advantages? Is that a good idea?
Yes, presumably you can't hear me when you are speaking.
No. When I'm speaking, then it's on send. And if it's on send, I don't hear the slightest trace of anything that you may say.
So I can't interrupt you, basically.
That's right, which is a considerable disadvantage in many cases, but it is, in my view, outweighed by the enormous advantages. You see, first of all, I don't hold anything to my ear. Secondly, the sound power is enormously greater, bearing in mind that I'm deaf on one ear and very, very slightly deaf on the other ear. Now, the sound power of this thing is tremendous. It comes out of a ceiling-mounted loudspeaker and fills the whole room. It's as if you were in the room speaking very loudly.
Right.
That's the first advantage.
Yeah.
The second advantage, of course, I don't have to hold the thing to my ear, which means that I don't get earache and I don't get a cramp in my arm and all that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Now, let me think. What are the other advantages? I can't even remember. That's the trouble. One has to write these things
down. Of course, you can't hear me speaking now, can you?
The great disadvantage is that very often I have my foot in the wrong place for the foot-operated send-receive switch, so that I think that I'm on... Let me just think. What is it? I think I'm on... receive, and in fact I'm on send, or vice versa. And in either case, there is, of course, complete confusion, and we miss a large part of the call.
Right. Yes.
It's almost like a wireless apparatus where you would say, over.
Yes.
No, but one doesn't want to confuse the Gesprächspartner, the partner in the conversation, by introducing that word.
So when it goes quiet, that you are operating a foot pedal of some sort?
If it's completely silent, it may well be that I am, not depressing the pedal when I should be. And that means that I would be on receive, I would be hearing you, but you would not hear me.
Right. Okay. Well, let's try and move on to the issue of the dogs. Basically, just that we need a sort of brief resume of your situation. This goes back to a court case. Your neighbour objected to the barking of your dogs. This case went to court, and you lost the appeal, didn't you?
Well, it's been to court several times, and the first time round, I won. That was in May last year. Thereafter, there have been successive appearances in court. I can't even remember how many. And
yeah.
The latest situation is that I lost.
Right.
That was quite recently, something like 3 weeks ago.
Well, how is it they could bring the case against you again?
Good afternoon and welcome to another edition of Wavelength on Resonance 104.4 FM and www.resonancefm.com on the internet. Today's programme continues with some fresh Seddon tapes. These were traced as a result of a random search by Clive Graham, director of Paradigm Discs and producer of the Seddon tapes Volume 1, the vinyl release still available from Paradigm Discs. Well, Clive was searching the internet for Seddon or Seddon tapes, using sort of Seddon as a keyword, I suppose, and came across a batch of reel-to-reel tapes being offered for sale on eBay. And these were advertised, for four Agfa tapes in boxes for possibly £12 to £15, depending on the bid. But in the footnotes of the description, it said from the collection of Captain Morris Seddon. This came as something of a shock because we were of the opinion that we had actually gathered or collected or owned all of the existing Seddon tapes. But no, it seems that some had escaped. Consequently, I contacted the seller and bought a total of 222 tapes from him, 172 of which are cassettes, spoken word recordings of Captain Morris Seddon's telephone conversations, and one audio letter to a police superintendent, which was a typically eccentric form of communication. Morris would occasionally dictate letters into his cassette machine and send the cassette instead of a letter. And that's the first one of these fresh Seddon tapes that I'm going to play today. Then there'll be some old ones, some more new ones. And these will be interspersed with music by composer Ronald Center and some Florence Foster Jenkins. But we'll start with this open letter. Well, not an open letter. It was a cassette letter, an audio cassette letter sent to a police superintendent. And presumably Morris kept a copy for his own records.
The time is 01:48 hours by my watch, which is 5 minutes fast, approximately. Let me get it quite right. No, it is 01. I beg your pardon, the watch is not fast tonight. The time is 01. Yes, it is fast. Of course it is. Because this other clock also indicates a rather similar figure. This clock indicates a 01:51. and is an electronic clock and is pretty accurate. And so that means that the actual time is 5 minutes prior to that. My name is Captain Maurice Seddon of Slough 42242, which is the old number. You have to prefix that with a 5. And I'm speaking at Datchet Cottage, 138 Horton Road. And the reason for making this recording is that I wish to record the facts of an incident that took place on the road a few minutes ago, and I want to avoid all possibility of any detail being forgotten. With the passage of time, the memory blurs. If the matter is recorded straight away, the facts are fully recorded. I was coming home on one of my historic ancient BSA motorcycles, which has been the subject of television broadcasts all over the world, along the Horton Road from the direction of Raysbury and Horton, about, with the order half an hour ago, perhaps 01:15. Now, as I rounded the curve near the Rising Sun Inn, I perceived coming towards me from the direction of Datchet Village, in other words, travelling in an easterly direction, an oncoming motor car whose headlamps were dazzling me more than any other vehicle had that evening, or rather that morning. Now, I cannot say with certainty whether the headlights of that vehicle were dipped or undipped. If they were dipped, then the dipping mechanism was working badly, and they were not dipping adequately. Or alternatively, they were on main beam. My impression was, quite simply, that they were on main beam. And had I not thought this, I would not have acted as I did. However, one does periodically come across cars which are nominally dipped, but where there is a fault with the dipping which isn't properly adjusted, so that they dazzle to very nearly the same extent, or quite to the same extent, as they would if they were on main beam. Be this as it may, on seeing this dazzling pair of lights coming at me, I did that which, in some, I suppose, approaching 50 years of driving experience, I know to be the custom of the road, be it legal or illegal. It is absolutely the custom, and I insist on this, that where a vehicle senses itself to be dazzled by another, it is quite normal to flash the headlights. So I flashed my headlights once, and I would normally have expected this to have triggered off a reaction on the part of the oncoming driver, who would say to himself, "Dear me, I'm being flashed. Why am I being flashed? Oh, I'm not on dip beam," and he would then normally dip, and the matter would be solved. But in this case, there was no response to my flash. So I then felt this was A, dangerous driving, because dazzling lights can very easily cause accidents. B, I considered it discourteous of the oncoming driver, and I then did that which I again insist from many years of driving is the custom. I flashed my single headlight on my motorcycle several times in rapid succession, perhaps 3 or 4 or 5 times in succession. Still no result from the oncoming car, still the dazzle. So I then did that which again I recognised to be the custom of many years, motoring, of many, many, many motorists, I would say a universal custom, be it legal or illegal, I do not know, but I absolutely insist that it is a standard custom. As I came approaching abreast with the vehicle, when I was perhaps 20 yards short, I gave a long blast on my powerful pair of wind horns in order to notify the driver that I was protesting vehemently against whatever he had to guess it might be that he was doing or not doing, which was either endangering or inconveniencing or annoying me in an unreasonable manner. Then I turned my flasher and turned left into Homely Road, because the two vehicles met at a point a short distance to the east of the junction of Horton and Homely Roads, and I had to enter Homely Road in order to get to my entrance. On turning the corner, I then gave my right signal with my flasher and turned and stopped outside my gate with my engine running, as is my custom of thousands of previous occasions, while I got out my key to open the gate. While I was so engaged, I was slightly puzzled to perceive, mainly by reflected light, that a vehicle had appeared, a light-coloured motor car was behind the motorcycle. The motorcycle was now facing into the gateway, So I couldn't see behind what it was or who it was. I just perceived the presence, I think by light reflection, that there was a vehicle there with its lights on, which was stationary behind my motorcycle and at right angles to it, facing to the south down Holmley Road. So at this point I turned round. I saw it was a police car. Police was written on the door quite clearly. And I said hello in a friendly way and went on with my gate opening operation. One of the occupants of the car, there were two occupants, got out. He was a policeman whom I recognised from Windsor. I'd met him before. He's a perfectly charming man. I have absolutely nothing against him. He's been very helpful in the past. His name, I asked him later on his name, and he told me he was P.C. Edwards. And he said, why did you blow your horn? I said, at which point are you referring to the blowing of the horn? Oh, when you came along this road. So I said, did you not perceive why I blew my horn? And he said, well, why did you? I said, did you not see the car which was coming towards me? And he said, that was me. So I replied, why the blazes did you not dip your headlights then? I flashed my lights and I blew my horn in protest because you did not dip your headlights. He replied, my headlights were on dip. I said, well, if they were on dip, there is a faulty construction in the vehicle. Something is amiss or a faulty adjustment. He said, I will have that seen to. He said, nevertheless, did you know what you were doing was illegal? I said, I beg your pardon. And what was illegal? I have driven motor bicycles and cars now since the 1940s. I drive very carefully, and I'm not in the custom of doing things that are illegal. Oh, yes, he said, the blowing of your horn was illegal. I said, well, now look, I do not dispute this. You are a man concerned with the law. You know far more about the law than I do. And if you tell me that that was illegal, no doubt it is illegal. But I say to you that if that is illegal, the law indeed, in this case again, yet again, is an ass. And I say again, the law is an ass. Because in all my driving experience of all these many years since the 1940s, I know, and no one can deny this to me, that it is the absolute custom of the road that when one driver does something to endanger or irritate or annoy or in any way inconvenience another driver, it is the absolute unbroken custom of, I suppose, of a century since motoring began, and motoring, after all, began more than a century ago. It is the absolute custom of the road, since it is no good shouting, since the other driver will not even hear what you're shouting or what it's about, the only method you have of protest is to blow your horn, and this is absolutely normal. Anyway, there we are. Those are the facts. I would put it to you that, presumably, I mean, if those lights were truly on dip, and I can hardly believe that such a sensible person as P.C. Edwards would say to me that they were on dip unless they truly were, well, if they were, then something is the matter. Because none of the other vehicles that I met on that road had that effect, and I met a number of vehicles at various points, and in my opinion, those lights were dazzling. Now, whether this is a matter of brilliance, or angle of inclination, or what the factor may be, I don't know, but dazzled they did. And I would then question this allegation that it is illegal to use this horn. I do not know whether it's right or wrong. It may be that it is illegal. If so, it is a very strange quirk of a very bad law, and it is high time that the law is repealed. And if that is illegal, then I have a jolly good mind, as an electronics and a wireless engineer, if that truly is illegal, I have a very good mind to equip all my vehicles with a sound amplifying system, with a loudspeaker and a microphone, so that I can address drivers who do things which are wrong on the road and say, will you please be so kind as to dip your lights? You are causing dazzle, or something to that kind, that sort. I would add, I have quite a little experience of motoring. I have a 1934 Rolls-Royce Phantom II, 7.668 litre, straight six. I have a 1963 Volkswagen German left-hand drive Beetle. I have a 1928 557cc BSA motorcycle. I have two 1950s BSA 500cc overhead valve machines. The 1928, by the way, is a side valve machine. I have a 1952 Vespa. I have a collection of electric carriages and various other vehicles, including an ancient Mercedes. And, as I say, I learnt to drive in Gordonston School, then a German foundation which had fled from Hitler, in the 1940s. And I have done a great deal of driving in my service experience as a Royal Signals officer. I have had to teach others to drive on many occasions. Dear me, I have driven for so many thousands and thousands and thousands of miles that I'd never ever be able to count them. All over Europe on many, many, many occasions. Germany, Italy, Austria, Switzerland, Luxembourg, Belgium, Holland, England, Scotland, Wales. Admittedly, I've never driven in Ireland. Anyway, there we are. That is the situation. And I wanted you, as the superintendent or senior inspector or chief inspector of police in Windsor, to know about this. And I would be grateful if you could have those lights on that police car attended to. And I would also be grateful if you would let me know what the legal position about the use of the horn is. Because if, indeed, what I was doing then is illegal, then countless millions of motorists must be breaking the law every second of every day of every year that has ever passed. Because I, who live on a crossroads here, constantly hear motor vehicles protesting in a manner which clearly is a protest against the misdeeds of other motorists. And if one may not do that, it's a fine state of affairs. Thank you for your very kind cooperation. And I hope you don't mind a recording. But a recording is so much better than waiting till the next day, because then you have everything crystal clear in your memory, because it's just happened. Captain Maurice Seddon, Royal Signals, retired, signing off. Postscript. Insofar as I could see, and bear in mind that the police car was directly behind me, so I had to screw my head right round to see, but my strong impression was, that the second person, the passenger, remaining in the front of the police car, appeared to be a woman PC. End of text. Thank you.
Il se donne de l'Angleterre de nouveau.
Oui, bonjour, monsieur.
Bonjour, madame. Je vous téléphone de nouveau du part de monsieur William English.
Oui.
Et il m'a demandé de vous dire que il en croit de ce document dont nous avons déjà parlé, qu'il s'agit d'une une écriture de à peu près probablement 1906. Pas que c'est certain, mais c'est probable. Il s'agit naturellement du partage de Midi. Le texte dans ce document est différent de tous les textes publiés qu'on a vus. Et on croit pour ces raisons-là que c'est une chose qui vraiment appartient dans l'archive de Claudel. Dit-on archive, c'est juste?
Écoutez, nous ne l'avons pas, mais c'est très intéressant pour nous. Ça, je suis très intéressé.
Oui, alors il m'a dit qu'il se trouve dans un élégant un élégant couvert de René Kiefer. Il s'intéresse de le vendre et il vous offre ça pour un prix de, en livres sterling anglais, 450 livres.
Combien? 450 livres?
C'est juste.
Oui. Écoutez, monsieur, alors là, est-ce que vous pouvez me donner votre numéro de téléphone?
Sûrement.
Je vais le noter parce que j'ai une nièce, Lady Northbourne, qui habite l'Angleterre. Et elle pourrait peut-être prendre contact avec vous.
Oui, sûrement. Lady Northbourne.
Un instant, je vais prendre un crayon et un papier
eh bien,
pour noter.
Eh bien. Mon nom, c'est le capitaine Maurice.
Monsieur Maurice?
Le capitaine Maurice. Sedon, S comme Sorrento, E comme Émile,
oui.
D comme Dover,
oui.
D comme Dover, O comme Orvieto,
oui.
N comme Napoli.
Sedon.
Sedon. Oui, capitaine Maurice Sedon. Et je me trouve sur le numéro, si on fait le numéro en Angleterre,
oui.
Et pas en France.
Oui.
Alors en Angleterre, on fait 0... 7,
oui.
5,
oui.
3,
oui.
Ça c'est le préfixe,
mm.
Et puis le numéro c'est 5,
oui.
4,
oui.
2,
2,
2
oui.
4,
4
2.
2.
Est-ce que vous auriez la bonté de répéter le numéro?
Alors 0, 7, 5, 3, 5, 4. 2, 2, 4, 2.
Absolument précise, madame. Et je me trouve dans l'endroit général de Windsor.
Vous êtes à Windsor.
Auprès de Windsor, à 3 kilomètres.
À 3 kilomètres de Windsor.
Et cette lady, comment est-ce qu'elle s'appelle encore?
Lady Northbourne.
Northbourne.
Northbourne, oui. Elle est la fille de mon frère Henri Claudel et elle a épousé Christopher Northbourne. Et elle vit à Londres et elle a une propriété, ils ont une propriété près de Deal.
Deal à Kent?
Deal, oui, tout près de... Je connais mal l'Angleterre.
Deal, c'est auprès, je crois, de Dover, sur la côte.
Près de Dover, oui.
Point Dover, c'est ça. Alors, c'est très bien. Et cette dame se mettra en contact avec moi.
Je vais téléphoner à mon frère qui va justement à Londres samedi prochain. Il va à Londres samedi prochain. Il pourrait peut-être prendre contact avec vous.
Ce sera idéal. Et je peux arranger qu'il peut voir ce document à Londres.
Bon, très bien.
Et votre frère, il parle anglais ou non?
Il parle anglais, oui, oui, naturellement.
C'est très bien. Alors, je vous remercie et j'attends une téléphone. Oh, une autre chose. J'ai un répondeur qui fonctionne bien dans le cas que je ne suis pas là.
Oui.
Et on peut laisser le message sur le répondeur et je vais téléphoner de nouveau.
D'accord.
Merci beaucoup.
Merci. Au revoir, monsieur.
Au revoir, madame.
Now, I do not, as I think I may have told you, I do not risk going out to investigate it. It's too dangerous. I've suffered in the past.
I've had bricks hurled through my window, narrowly missing me, through my closed window. I've been assaulted and so forth in a variety of ways.
Yeah.
So I just accept the fact that these things happen. Something was going on out there. I don't know what it was. It was probably one of what I call the would-be incursions.
So was that the sound of the dogs actually through the window? I mean, was
the closed door. Everything's closed here.
Okay.
The door closed.
All right. And how many dogs do you have at the moment?
10 plus pups.
Ten plus pups. Okay.
Yes.
And what is the most amount of dogs you've ever had in your?
18, many years ago.
Uh huh. And why do you think you need so many?
I've lived here for 49 years. For reasons that one can only conjecture at, I have been targeted, harassed, persecuted, vandalized, hooliganized, burgled, stolen from, even to the point of including stealing on more than one occasion a bitch complete with a whole litter of puppies. I've had sabotage done to my various parts of my installations. I've had break-ins, things, and there's been no limit to the number of things that have happened.
Yeah.
The worst thing of all that happened was when my then diabetic part-time caretaker was either murdered or he was manslaughtered by these creatures when they made an incursion when I was abroad.
Yes, but by creatures you don't mean the dogs, do you?
I don't mean the dogs at all. I mean the didikoids.
Oh, right. Okay.
Whenever I asked the police, this is going back to 1958 and thereafter, on every occasion when I asked the then police, which is quite different from the present police, and I asked who are the miscreants who have performed this and that crime, in every single case they replied to me using their word, not mine, a word that I had never heard of in my life before. They would always say, oh, this is clearly the work of the diddy-coys.
Uh-huh.
How it's written, I don't know. Spelt, I've never seen it written. And I had to inquire what it was, and I was told that it was a kind of quasi-gypsy, but the informants would always say, but they're not proper gypsies, you see. And I did not see, and I do not see.
Right.
And these people have targeted me throughout the years, and they continue to do so.
Yeah. Now, when you went to court the last time, I think the barrister tried to suggest that you were being racist by using the word diddy-coy.
Yes, not only the barrister said that, but the police repeatedly have accused me of being racist.
Yeah.
The laughable thing about it is that I'm only using the word which they, the police, taught me to use all those years ago.
Yeah,
I had never heard it before, but at that time the whole of the police force and the whole of the local population used only that word to describe these people.
Yeah. And what is the state of play now? Are you going? You're apparently going to appeal again, aren't you?
I'm appealing again. And if all should go as it's meant to, I think I'm right in saying that it goes to court again on about the 24th, 25th of January next year, that is 08,
right,
at the Reading Crown Court.
And you don't have any legal representation, do you?
Can't afford a solicitor. I'm told that, I'm very impecunious, having lost a lot of money through the collapse of two separate pension schemes, one of which was the infamous...
Fine. Now, I'm Captain Seddon, S-E-D-D-O-N. May I know your name, please?
My name's Parker.
Mr. Parker, in fact, your letter, dated the 22nd of the 4th, was photocopied for reference, copy retained here, and the original was sent off to my insurers on the 5th of May. Furthermore, also on the 7th of May, I personally made a telephone call to a Mr. Leach, L-E-A-C-H.
Yeah.
Who is the branch claims controller at the Norwich Union.
Yeah.
35 Station Road, Reading. Telephone 583-644. And I read to him the document over the telephone in addition to posting it.
Yeah.
Furthermore, on the very day of the incident, Good Friday, 17th April, at 22:25 hours, you notice I'm half German and correspondingly precise, I wrote a lengthy letter to Mr. Leach informing him of all the details of the incident. And I'm shocked and horrified beyond words that he has not got in contact with you, because he assured me that he would do so. I shall now ring him up and give him a rocket. But in the meantime, as he's evidently not taking action, perhaps you'd like to get on to him. Because I don't pay my insurers to be inert, nor do I pay insurers to receive threatening letters from other people's insurers.
Right, OK, then. Right, well, OK, thank you so much
for calling. Not at all. Goodbye.
Thank you.
Of Lear. Is it working? Well, this is an ancient Welsh mythology book called the Mabinogion, translated by Gwyn Jones and Thomas Jones, and appears to equate with the English mythology of King Arthur. It is on mythology and ancient Welsh history of this kind that Rosemary has named this house the Beckoning Lady. And we're reading here the chapter entitled Branwen, Daughter of Lir, spelled L-L-Y circumflex R. Bendigeidfran, son of Lir, was crowned king over this island. Note that where island occurs, it appears to mean the country of Wales, though how they come to the conclusion that Wales is an island, I don't understand. Over this island, and exalted with the crown of London, whatever that may mean. There is there no full stop, and the sentence appears not to end. The next sentence begins with a capital A. As one afternoon he was at Hardlech in Ardudwy, at a court of his, and they were seated upon the rock of Hardlech, overlooking the sea, and his brother Manawydan, son of Lir, with him, and two brothers on the mother's side, Nisien and Efnisien, and besides these, noblemen, as was seemly, around the king. His two brothers on the mother's side were sons of Eurosvidid by his mother Penarddun, double D, daughter of Bailey, son of Meinogan. And one of those youths was a good youth. He would make peace between the two hosts when their wrath was at the highest. That was Nisien. The other would cause strife between the two brothers when they were most loving. And as they were seated thus, they could see 13 ships coming from the south of Ireland, and making towards them with an easy, swift motion, the wind behind them, and nearing them swiftly. "I see ships yonder," said the king, "and making boldly for the land, and bid the men of the court equip themselves, and go and see what their intent is. The men equipped themselves, and approached them below. When they saw the ships from near at hand, certain were they that they had never seen such ships in fairer trim than they, beautiful, seemly, and brave ensigns of brocaded silk were upon them. And thereupon, lo, one of the ships outstripping the others, and they could see a shield lifted up above the ship's deck, with the point of the shield upwards in token of peace. And the men drew near them, that they might hear each other's discourse. They put out boats, and came towards the land, and they greeted the king, for the king could hear them from the place where he was, upon a high rock over their heads. God prosper you, said he, and welcome to you,
Whose is this host of ships, and who is chief over them? Lord, said they, Matholwich, king of Ireland, is here, and the ships are his. What would he? Asked the king. Does he wish to come to land? Not so, Lord, said they. He is come on an errand to thee, unless he succeed in his errand. What errand is his? Asked the king. He seeks to ally himself with thee, Lord, said they. He has come to ask for Branwen, daughter of Lear, and if it seem good to thee, he wishes to unite the island of the mighty, by which they mean Wales, apparently, with Ireland, so that they become the stronger. Why, he replied, let him come to land, and we will take counsel concerning that. That answer went to him. I will go gladly, said he. He came to land, and he was made welcome, and great was the throng in the court that night, what with his hosts and those of the court. Straightway on the morrow they took counsel. What was determined in counsel was to bestow Branwen upon Matholwich, and she was one of the three matriarchs of this island. Fairest maiden in the world was she, and a time was set at Aberfraw, double F, to sleep with her, and a start was made thence. And those hosts started for Aberfraw, double F, Matholwich and his hosts in their ships, but Bendigeidfran and his hosts by land, until they came to Aberfraw. At Aberfraw they began the feast and sat them down. This is how they sat: the king of the island of the mighty, Wales, and Manawydan, son of Lear, one side of him, and Matholwich the other side, and Branwen, daughter of Lear, next to him. They were not within a house, but within tents. Bendigeidfran had never been contained within a house, and they began the carousal. They continued to carouse and converse, and when they perceived that it was better for them to seek slumber than to continue the carousal, to sleep they went. And that night Matholwich slept with Branwen. And on the morrow all the host of the court arose, and the officers began to discuss the billeting of the horses and the grooms, and they billeted them in every quarter as far as the sea. And thereupon, lo, one day, Efnisien, the quarrelsome man we spoke of above, happening upon the billets of Matholwich's horses, and he asked whose horses they were. Is it? It's beautiful English, but of course quite archaic. And this is a little bit similar, except that it has these unpronounceable Welsh names in it. But it has the same precision in many ways. Rather remarkable. And this is apparently the basis, this kind of thing, of her naming this house the Beckoning Lady. Because that all, somewhere it comes into all this, this Beckoning Lady. What it's all about, I don't know. But, extraordinary. Matholwich, what a name. So is a farmhouse, a small farmhouse, a very modest little farm, a little tiny farm. What would you call it? A small holding, Paul? Would that be the right description? There's an old disused farmhouse, which is now used as a grain store plus a chicken house, a sort of chicken run. And adjacent to that is a farmyard. And then 100 yards down the road is the new building, which would have been erected about 30, 40 years ago. Which is what they actually live in, which is a small house. What?
About 50 years.
Yeah. 50 years ago, as long as that.
About 50 yards.
50 yards. Oh, there's more than 50 yards. That's at least 80 yards. Well, anyway, whatever it is, it's adjacent. that is the thing they actually inhabit. And that is a small house, a little tiny house, really, quite small. But then we would merely be paying a courtesy call there to say hello. And adjacent to the old farmhouse, there are the farm buildings and the farm yard, which is still used. And then I suppose 100 metres from that, no, 200 metres from that, perhaps, on the other side of the road and uphill, there is a small track which cuts across. There's a point where two roads meet like this. And coming across the junction, connecting from road to road, is a little track. And in the triangle, between the track and the apex of the triangle, is a bluebell wood. And adjacent to the track is this little chicken house. So you've got the track, the two roads meeting, the bluebell wood in the apex, and the little building, the little chicken house thing, in a corner of the field adjacent to the track. All this about 200 metres from the farmhouse. So it's quite isolated, but it's near the road, and therefore you hear any car that passes. And it used to be the case that one car used to pass, what, every 3/4 of an hour? Every hour? Mm-hmm. Every hour and a quarter, that sort of thing. Possibly less frequently. You might get nothing at all for 2/3 of a day, and then you might get two cars going by. But it's in a wilderness on top of a hill. Green fields, masses of bluebells, out probably at the moment. Trees, small, rather stunted trees. Green grass, lots of sheep. Welsh farmer talking in hieroglyphics. Funny old dilapidated farmhouse, only fit for the hens to live in. And Paul's chicken house, with its Vita glass. And... Now, what are those people's names? Di is the Christian name. Bound, is that right?
He's bound.
Di Bound, yes.
Well, he's dead, and, no.
Oh, he's died, is he? I'm sorry.
Dead, oh, no, she died.
Oh, dear, I beg his pardon. And then, who is still alive?
You did.
Did I?
Erwin.
Oh, Arwin, that's right.
Bound.
Arwin Bound. And then, who is the young Bound? Is that Arwin?
Tudor,
that's right. There is a young Bound who must by now be about 30?
25,
called Tudor. And then his father is called Arwin. And what is Arwin's wife called? And she's a fat, buxom lass and very jolly.
What was her name? Do you remember?
I've forgotten. Can't remember.
Long
time since we were there. And Arwin is the farmer, you see, with Tudor as the son. And they look after this little tiny farm. And they own this field, in the corner of which stands the chicken house. And they are the sort of landlords of the place. They're nice, friendly people. And at one stage, during the lifetime of Paul's father, the Packards...
Thank you. I'd like to share this wonderful experience with you.
This program has been brought to you by Resonance 104.4 FM. If you liked what you heard and want to support our work, please make a donation at fundraiser.resonance.fm.